Accidents Will Happen by Melissina. Read by Argentum Lupin. If you'd told Pete 5 years ago that Patrick would be up and singing at 4 in the morning, he would have laughed in your face. Patrick was never a morning person before they opened Yeasty Boys. Even now, he only makes his schedule work through a fanatical devotion to naps. But such is the depth of Patrick's dedication to baked goods, or the store's bottom line. It's just a short walk downstairs from the apartment they share above the shop, but most days Patrick beats Pete to the store, and by the time Pete gets downstairs, the industrial coffee pot is already fired up, and Patrick's kneading dough and belting out Motown hits in the back. Today is no exception. Patrick's singing These Arms of Mine and punching down the sourdough. His broad shoulders are straining the sleeves of his black t-shirt, and the flour on his arms makes the faint hairs there stand out. There's a light dusting of flour on his cheek, and Pete has to grab the stack of mail on the counter to keep himself from brushing it off. Usually he can keep himself under control, but Patrick looks especially good this morning, and Pete is only one man. "Morning, sleepyhead," Patrick says as Pete sorts through the mail. Quarterly tax bill, invoice from the bakery supply for the last round of boxes, thank you note from the food bank where they donate the day-old bread, and finally a slim manila envelope from the county clerk's office. "Morning," Pete says absently, running a finger under the flap of the last letter. There are 2 sheets of paper in the envelope. Pete skims the first page, trying to make sense of it with his under-caffeinated brain. Congratulations, legislation, partnership. He blinks at the dense legalese and flips past to the second piece of paper. He blinks at the document. There, in large letters, right across the top, it reads, Certificate of Marriage. And under that, very clearly, are Pete and Patrick's names. Pete tilts his head and reads it again, but no matter how much he stares at it, nothing changes. "Pete?" Patrick says, in the tone that means he's repeating himself. "Are you okay?" He's standing right by Pete, wiping dough off his hands onto the hem of his t-shirt. Pete hands Patrick the document, and he stares at it for a long time. Absently, Pete notices that Patrick's gotten a long smear of flour on the heavy beige paper. Patrick looks up, confusion and frustration warring in his expression. "Pete, what the fuck did you do?"
"Pete," Nate says, shaking his head. "This is why you let your attorney file all the paperwork."
"It was before we knew you," Pete protests. "We were broke. It seemed pretty straightforward. How was I supposed to know that it was a domestic partnership form?"
"Well," Nate says with a long-suffering air, "you could have read the form. I know that's asking a lot."
"We were starting a business on a shoestring," Patrick interjects. "We were both working 80 hours a week." He shoots Pete an apologetic glance, clearly remorseful about his earlier freakout. "It's an understandable mistake. We just need to fix it." Something unpleasant churns in Pete's stomach. It's not like he expected Patrick to be delighted by this development, but Pete can't help feeling like he's the mistake that needs to be fixed.
"No big deal," Nate says, tapping his pen against his pad. "You never presented yourselves as married. The marriage was never consummated. We'll just get it annulled."
Pete stiffens at that, remembering how sweet and sticky Patrick's mouth had been against his, the desperate little sounds he'd made when Pete fucked him, the way he'd averted his eyes the next morning and pretended like nothing had happened. Beside him, Patrick says,
Technically?
His cheeks are flushed and his eyes are fixed on the coconut cream pie they'd brought for Nate. Nate's eyebrows are raised and he's shaking his head again.
"Really?"
Pete imagines throwing the pie at Nate. They've brought him a lot of business. Probably he wouldn't even file charges. Patrick buries his face in his hands.
"One time," he says, his voice muffled.
"There was marzipan," Pete says weakly. Nate's professional reserve cracks completely and he guffaws. Pete resists the temptation to follow Patrick's lead and hide his face. Patrick looks up sharply and explains, "Pete always gets a little loopy when he's had too much sugar."
"You guys own a bakery," Nate says dryly. "Anyway, what's your excuse?"
"It was our anniversary." Hearing himself, Patrick immediately adds, "Of the business. We were celebrating and things got out of hand."
He's blushing all the way down his neck now. Pete interjects, "Anyway, does that mean we can't get the marriage annulled?"
"Not unless you want to lie under oath. And as your attorney, I don't recommend that."
Patrick's biting his lip and staring at the fucking pie again. Pete forces himself to say, "So we get a divorce, yeah?" Nothing like getting exactly what you've always wanted and then immediately returning it.
"It's really your only option if you don't want to be married. But it's more complicated than an annulment. It will take at least 60 days after you file to get it finalized. And there could be complications with the business. Family law is not my specialty. I don't know offhand how it would go."
"We can't jeopardize the shop," Patrick says instantly. "We've worked too hard to build the business."
"Right," Pete agrees. "They've got a lot invested in the shop. They can't put that at risk. We can probably wait another week or two while you do some research."
Nate sighs. If he keeps shaking his head like that, he's going to give himself whiplash.
"Okay, I've got a friend from law school who does family law. I'll give her a call and let you know what I hear."
Patrick is quiet on the drive back to the bakery. Of course, part of that is exhaustion. It's only 3 o'clock, but he's been up for nearly 12 hours. He leans against the passenger window and stares out blankly at the city as they drive.
"I'm sorry," Pete says, for at least the 10th time. "I fucked up."
"You don't have to apologize," Patrick says fiercely. "I should apologize. I was a jerk this morning. It took me by surprise."
"Of course I have to apologize," Pete insists miserably. "It's my fault.
Patrick cuts him off. "Look, Nate will figure it out. We'll get all the paperwork sorted and everything will be fine." Deliberately changing the subject, he asks, "Are Gabe and Bill still coming over tomorrow to watch the game?" Pete turns his car into the parking lot.
"Yeah, I told them I'd cook dinner."
Patrick takes his nap and Pete sits in the office and pays bills while Ian shuts down the shop. They've been talking about extending the shop's hours, but that would require at least 2 more employees. If they're going to have to pay for a divorce, they probably can't afford to hire more staff. Anyway, Pete's not sure if the additional business would justify the expense yet. Pete tries not to worry about what Nate will find out. Like, worst case scenario, there's no reason they couldn't just stay married, right? Neither of them is dating anyone else, and they can always get divorced later. But he can't stop thinking about it. He tosses and turns all night, weirdly aware of Patrick sleeping down the hall. When Patrick's lease ran out, it seemed like the obvious thing for him to move in with Pete. The apartment has 2 bedrooms, they were already paying for it along with the lease on the shop space, and they could invest the money Patrick would save on rent back into the business. And it had been years since that one little indiscretion. They were obviously completely 100% over it. Despite Gabe's very vocal misgivings, it's mostly worked out well. Pete hates to be alone, but after working the counter all day, there's a very select group of people he can tolerate without turning into a giant dick. Being with Patrick is like being alone without being lonely. Patrick's control freak tendencies don't extend to his living space, and Pete's never been good at prioritizing housework, so they're both happy to live in borderline squalor. They've even been talking about getting a dog. But now, Pete can't stop thinking about the fact that, technically, they're married. Seen in that light, the fact that they spend nearly all of their time together feels a little codependent. Given the hours they keep, Pete and Patrick tend to eat dinner early. Gabe and Bill are willing to accommodate their schedule in exchange for dinner. Neither of them likes to cook, and they still live like college students, subsisting primarily on ramen noodles and frozen pizza. Tonight's nothing fancy. Pete made a pot of bean chili and they made cheese toast with yesterday's sourdough, but Bill and Gabe eat 3 servings apiece. Patrick's in the kitchen taking the flourless chocolate cake out of the oven when Pete's phone rings. Pete registers Nate's name on the screen and immediately realizes that this isn't a conversation he wants Gabe or Bill to hear. He says, "Sorry, it's our attorney. Work stuff," as he stands and moves into the living room. From the window, he can see the black and white striped awning over the entrance to the store. There are little eddies of snowflakes whirling in the beams of the streetlights.
"Yo, what's up?"
Nate says,
"So I talked to Kate, and we should be able to dissolve the marriage without making any changes to the ownership structure of the business. You'll need to sign a partnership agreement, the right one this time, but it shouldn't hurt the business in any way."
"So I guess we should just go ahead and file for divorce?"
Pete hears the uncertainty in his voice. It's stupid. They weren't really married. It's just straightening out the paperwork. Fixing the mistake.
I can submit the papers on Monday morning,
Nate says. Pete makes a valiant effort to match Nate's nonchalance. And then we have to wait 60 days until it's final?
Yep,
Nate says, a little distracted. He's put Pete on speaker and there's engine noise in the background. He's clearly ready to start his weekend.
So please, no whirlwind courtships in the next 2 months. Bigamy charges are way outside my area of expertise.
Got it. No weddings until everything's final. Pete hangs up and turns to head back into the dining room and runs smack into Bill, leaving the toilet. One look at Bill's face confirms that he's heard everything.
Pete, do you have a youthful indiscretion you're trying to escape? A mad wife in the attic? And why now? Are there wedding bells in your future?
Gabe leans around the dining room wall, eyebrows raised.
Who's getting married?
Pete. Well, divorced. Bill corrects pedantically. The marriage is all speculation on my part.
Wait, Gabe says. Did you have one of those quickie weddings in Vegas, too?
Bill makes an indignant noise.
It was officiated by an Elvis impersonator. How was I supposed to know it was legal?
Fun fact, Gabe says, smirking. In Vegas, you can also get divorced by an Elvis impersonator. Apparently, the judge even sang Jailhouse Rock after the hearing. Patrick is standing in the doorway to the kitchen holding a stack of plates.
I am so confused right now.
Me too, Gabe says. Come on, Pete, inquiring minds want to know. Tell us the sordid tale of your secret marriage. Pete throws Patrick a helpless look. Patrick scrunches up his nose and sighs.
There was a screw-up with the paperwork for the business. We accidentally submitted the domestic partnership form instead of, you know, the business partnership one, and when the same-sex marriage law went into effect, all the registered domestic partnerships converted to marriages. We're getting it sorted out now.
Sorry to disappoint you, Pete chimes in, but it's not a big deal. Unlike Bill's Vegas adventure. When the hell did this happen, Bill?
Years and years ago, Bill says, waving a hand vaguely. Before me and Gabe, well, not before, but before we got serious, Cherise and I still exchange holiday cards.
He gives Pete a sharp look.
Don't try to change the subject. You guys are really married?
Just for the next 60 days, Pete says, avoiding Gabe's look. Who wants some cake?
I don't know, Bill says slyly. Is it wedding cake?
Pete can't exactly say that he's surprised when Gabe shows up at the bakery the next day and insists that they go out for an early lunch.
We can just eat here, Pete says. Did you know we're the top-rated lunch spot for this neighborhood on Yelp?
Pizza, Gabe insists, cutting his eyes at Patrick, who's stocking the display case with dark chocolate cupcakes. Pete says, we could totally start serving pizza, right, Stump? It's just bread with tomato sauce and cheese on it.
Patrick doesn't even look up.
Wrong kind of oven, he says automatically. Pete's lost count of how many times they've had this argument. Because it's tradition at this point, he says, when we expand the kitchen...
Yeah, Patrick agrees. When we expand next door, you can totally blow all of our profits on a pizza oven and screw up all our branding.
Gabe interjects, in the meantime, I have to be back at work in an hour, so maybe we could go to Stella's?
That's playing dirty. Gabe knows Stella's is Pete's favorite pizza place.
Pete makes one last-ditch effort and says, are you sure you can spare me, Trick?
Patrick looks around the empty shop and cocks an eyebrow.
Ian's in the back and Spencer's coming in at 11:30. I think we'll manage without you for an hour.
Okay, Pete says. He knows when he's defeated. He heads into the back to grab his coat.
They're barely out the door when Gabe says, okay, Spill, what's the deal with this marriage thing?
I told you, Pete says irritably. I submitted the wrong paperwork, and we didn't even realize it until the law changed.
I'm not trying to get all up in your business.
Oh, wait, I'm totally trying to get all up in your business. You do realize that this is the shittiest idea of all time, right?
It's not an idea. It's a thing that happened, and we're fixing it, and it's totally not a big deal.
Uh-huh. Gabe's skeptical look is unparalleled. Like, how did this even happen?
It was an accident!
You accidentally married the dude you've been in love with for years?
Yeah, okay, sure.
Gabe waves a hand impatiently. Whatever. What are you gonna do now?
Get a divorce?
Pete barely manages not to add, duh, at the end of that sentence. And in the meantime, you guys are just going to keep living together? Yeah? Oh, okay, I'm sure that's going to go well. Or you could talk to Patrick about how you feel, or find someone else, or do literally anything else in the world besides torture yourself like this. But, you know, you do you. Pete is so tired of having this conversation with Gabe. Look, Patrick made it clear he's not into me. There's no point in making things awkward between us. I'm just, you know, processing. Once I'm done working through this, I'll find someone else. I just need time. When you're about to celebrate the 10th anniversary of your hopeless crush, it's time to stop pinning your hopes on time heals all wounds. Gabe pulls out his phone and types rapidly as he walks. Huh, did you know the 10th anniversary gift is tin? Maybe you should give yourself a tinfoil hat. He looks up and says earnestly, free your mind, Petey, and your body will follow. Pete gives Gabe a hard shove. Why are we even friends? After they close up the shop, Pete goes to the gym and runs on the treadmill until his thighs are shaky. He doesn't let himself think about his conversation with Gabe. Instead, he just keeps turning up his workout mix. The guy on the next treadmill clearly isn't happy about the music leaking out of Pete's earbuds, but it's not Pete's problem if he can't appreciate Ariana Grande. When Pete gets home, he lets himself in as quietly as possible, not wanting to wake Patrick. But when Pete gets into the living room, Patrick's sitting on the couch eating chocolate chips straight from the bag and watching Amazing Cakes. Couldn't nap? Patrick shakes his head. I tossed and turned for a while and gave it up as a bad bet. Have you eaten? Patrick indicates the chocolate chips and Pete snorts. I can't believe I'm saying this, but have you eaten real food? That's usually Patrick's line, but the thing is, he's usually right. When Patrick doesn't respond, Pete says, I'm going to make myself some pasta. You want some? Patrick shrugs. Pete goes into the kitchen and puts water on to boil, then pulls out an assortment of leftover vegetables and a handful of basil leaves out of the fridge, and a bag of pasta and a can of cannellini beans out of the pantry. Before long, the kitchen smells of sautéing onions and garlic. Pete leaves the baking to Patrick. It requires a level of precision that Pete finds stifling, but he's a damn good cook. Baking is science, cooking is art, and Pete prides himself on his artistic impulses, despite his business degree. In the living room, the MASH theme song is playing. Pete dumps the pasta into the boiling water and calls, "Everything okay in there?"
"Yeah,"
Patrick says, in a not exactly convincing tone. Pete stops himself from asking if he can get Patrick anything. He already knows Patrick will blow him off. Pete adds a little white wine to the vegetables, corks the bottle, and then, on second thought, pulls the cork out and digs out a couple of dusty wine glasses from the cabinet and pours a few inches in each one. When he comes back into the living room, the sun is set and the room is dark except for the glow of the television. Pete flips on the lights and Patrick blinks at him in confusion.
I made dinner, Pete says, suddenly uncertain.
Thanks, Patrick says, taking the plate and glass like he's not sure what to do with them. He takes a tentative bite and chews slowly. His eyes close briefly, and the look on his face is indecent. Oh man, that's fantastic. I didn't realize how hungry I was. By the time Pete returns with his own plate, Patrick's eaten half his pasta. The credits are rolling for MASH, and Pete takes over the remote, flipping through the channels until he finds an episode of Big Bang Theory. Patrick scrapes the last bit of sauce off his plate and licks his fork, making satisfied noises. He sets the plate on the coffee table and leans his head on Pete's shoulder, sighing heavily. He's a warm weight against Pete's side, and Pete can't help but set his own plate aside and put an arm around Patrick's shoulders.
Long day, huh?
Yeah. Patrick sounds exhausted. The alarm's going to go off way too early tomorrow morning. Pete ruffles Patrick's hair and pulls him in closer.
Try to get some sleep if you can, okay?
Pete's forgotten what it's like to have a real weekend, but at least on Saturdays, Ian and Spencer open the bakery, so Pete and Patrick don't have to get up quite so early. Pete sleeps in until nearly 7 a.m. and wakes to bright sunshine and the sound of Patrick singing along to David Bowie in the kitchen. Pete's tempted to linger in bed, but the tantalizing smells wafting out of the kitchen are irresistible. Not really awake enough to get dressed, he just pulls on a pair of jeans and shuffles down the hall barefoot and shirtless. Patrick is standing at the stove, scrambling eggs and frying soy sausage. He's wearing his skinniest jeans, and even with his back turned, Pete can tell he's wearing his Love Menace t-shirt. Pete recognizes the little hole where the collar is starting to come away from the body of the shirt.
As Patrick pours the eggs into the skillet, he sings, "Time to face the strange ch-ch-changes," and shimmies his hips in time to the music. Pete can't help but notice that those jeans do great things for Patrick's ass. Patrick turns to put the bowl in the dishwasher and says, "Oh, hey, good morning. I felt like a big breakfast. Do you want me to heat up some cinnamon rolls?" Pete blinks and clears his throat. Yeah, sure. You want me to make coffee?" "Already done," Patrick says, which, if Pete had been operating on any brain cells whatsoever, he would have realized. No way is Patrick this perky without caffeine. The sunshine is accompanied by unseasonably warm weather, and by the time they make it down to the bakery, the gray snow that's piled on the curb is starting to melt. It almost feels like spring. Pete hums to himself while he does the morning's deliveries, and on his way back to the bakery, he swings by the taqueria and picks up lunch for everybody. In the kitchen, Spencer is decorating cupcakes, and Ian is unpacking boxes from their supplier, making a point of bending over low to show off his ass. Spencer is, as usual, oblivious. Pete's beginning to think that Spencer's just trolling all of them, trying to see how far Ian will go to get his attention before he finally relents. Pete leaves their tacos in the office and heads up front, where Patrick is working the cash register. There's a tall guy with a prominent neck tattoo and a lot of piercings at the counter, looming over Patrick and smiling in a way that lights up his whole face. Patrick's got one hip cocked, and he's leaning forward, nodding enthusiastically. Instantly, Pete's good mood comes crashing down around him. He's frozen in the doorway, clutching the bag of tacos in his hand, and watching Patrick flirt with the customer. Patrick's saying, "Yeah, they used to play a lot at this place around the corner from here. They're great." The customer grins even wider and props his elbows on the bar so he can lean in closer.
"Have you heard the new album?"
"I didn't even know they had a new album," Patrick says.
"Yeah, well, I'm tight with Ben, the bassist, so I got to hear it early. If you..."
"I brought you some lunch," Pete says, unable to watch anymore. His voice is discordant, too loud and abrupt. Patrick turns. The expression on his face is fond, and Pete wants so badly for that look to be for him, but he knows it's just lingering there from Patrick's conversation with the customer. "Hey, thanks. Let me just finish up with Travi, and maybe you can spell me while I eat?" He turns back to the customer, Travi, presumably, and says, "Sorry, you were saying?" Pete knows he should back off and give Patrick some space for this conversation, but a contrary impulse makes him grab a rag and head out into the seating area. The guy at the counter is the only customer, and everything is generally in order, but that doesn't stop Pete from wiping down all the tables. He isn't trying to eavesdrop, but it's impossible not to hear every word of the conversation at the counter. He almost drops the rag when Travi says,
"Hey, so they're going to be doing an album release party next week at Rouge. You want to go with me? We could grab some dinner, make a night of it."
Patrick hesitates for just a second. It's only when he says, "I appreciate the offer, but, you know, I don't think that would work out," that Pete realizes he's been holding his breath. He feels a little dizzy. Travi says,
"Hey, no harm in asking, right? And if you change your mind, you've got my card, so you know how to reach me."
"Sure," Patrick says easily. Pete doesn't trust himself to look at Patrick until he hears Travi head out the door. Pete turns back, and Patrick's pinning Travi's card to the bulletin board behind the counter. "Nice guy," he says absently. "He's an artist. Wanted to know if he could display some of his work here."
"We've got Lindsay's stuff up until the end of the month," Pete says. Then, "He, seemed pretty into you."
Patrick shrugs. "Yeah, I guess."
"He asked you out," Pete insists, "and he's pretty much your exact type. Why'd you turn him down?"
"Well," Patrick says with a wry look, "sooner or later I would have had to tell him I was married." On Monday, Nate sends Pete and Patrick an email that just says,
"Paperwork filed, hearing scheduled for March 23rd. Please don't do anything stupid in the meantime."
Nate fails to define stupid, so possibly he could be blamed for what happens next. The problem is, Pete can't stop thinking about the dude who hit on Patrick at the bakery. The more Pete thinks about it, the guiltier he feels. Patrick gave up the opportunity to bone a really hot guy because of Pete's screw-up with the paperwork. It's criminal, really, and Pete feels like he owes Patrick something to make up for it. But really, it was just a nagging sense of responsibility until Patrick made the marzipan cardamom cookies.
It's not Pete's fault that every time he smells almonds, he thinks about kissing Patrick and digging his fingers into the soft roll of flesh right above his hips. It's a very distinctive smell, and Pete can't help it if it gives him flashbacks. Anyway, marzipan cookies weren't even supposed to be on the menu. Pete didn't have time to emotionally prepare himself. Pete's helping Ian at the counter when he smells the cookies baking in the back. It distracts him so much that he gives three people the wrong change and puts chocolate syrup in someone's chai latte. He fumbles his way through the lunch rush, and as soon as things are quiet, he leaves Ian at the counter and heads into the back. Patrick is pulling cookies out of the oven. His cheeks are flushed, and there's flour in his hair. Pete kind of wants to taste the little beads of sweat along his hairline. "Hey," Pete says, fidgeting with the hem of his t-shirt just for something to do with his hands. "I've been thinking about your situation with Travi last week." Patrick's brow furrows.
"Situation?
The thing where you turned him down because of the whole..." Pete waves his hand, indicating the two of them, the shop, their entire lives. "Married thing? Geez, real suave, Wentz. Pull it together." "It's not..." "No, it is," Pete insists, pushing through the awkwardness. "I mean, it's my fault, and it's not fair that you have to, like, deny yourself because of my fuck-up, and..." Patrick looks like he's about to jump in again, so Pete rushes to say, "So I could just, like, take care of that for you." Patrick stops, mouth hanging open, and just stares at Pete. After a beat, he says, "What?" "Like, it wouldn't have to be a big deal. Just a friend helping a friend out." "What the fuck are you talking about?" Patrick almost always follows Pete's train of thought, and when he doesn't, he can get a little snippy. Pete breaks it down for him. "You're not getting laid because we're married. We're married because of my mistake, so I can just fulfill my conjugal duties, you know, until the divorce is final. And then you can call Travi or whoever and do your thing." Patrick blinks slowly, long lashes fanning down over his cheeks. "That seems like..." He trails off, and his eyes go distant. Maybe it's Pete's imagination, but he thinks Patrick's face gets redder. "I guess we are married, right?" "Right," Pete agrees, relief making his knees weak. Now that he's put the offer out there, he can't imagine how much more awkward it would have been if Patrick had turned him down. "We could just try it to, like, take the edge off." "Okay," Patrick says slowly. He looks a little dazed. "We should, shut the shop down first, yeah?" Pete hadn't actually meant right now, but hey, no time like the present, right? "Sure thing," he says. It starts out with bravado, but his assumed confidence runs out fast. "And then we can go upstairs and..." "Yeah," Patrick says, and now he's definitely blushing. Pete imagines the feel of all that hot skin under his hands, and then he's blushing too, grinning at Patrick like an idiot. "I guess we ought to, get to it."
"Yeah."
Patrick just stands there staring at Pete, and then he bites his lip, and how is Pete supposed to resist that? He takes a step forward and tilts his head so he can press a quick kiss to Patrick's mouth. His lips are lush and soft beneath Pete's, and when Pete swipes his tongue over them, he tastes sugar and coffee and almonds. Patrick's lips part, and there's a long moment where Pete forgets to breathe. Patrick steps away and bites his bottom lip again nervously. "You know, it's going to be quiet the rest of the afternoon. Ian could probably..." "Yeah," Pete babbles. "Yeah, absolutely." Once they're upstairs, it's even more awkward. Pete says, "Do you want to..." At the same time that Patrick says, "We could..." Pete stops and gestures for Patrick to go on. Patrick grimaces. "My bedroom? Or yours?" Pete hasn't changed the sheets on his bed in a while. Also, he's pretty sure there's a half-empty bag of Doritos somewhere in the sheets. "Yours. Do you have... stuff?" Patrick's eyes widen. "I have lube? Do you have condoms?" Pete shakes his head. He can't actually remember the last time he got off with someone other than his right hand. It was definitely before the last time he changed his sheets. Patrick says, So, we can do other things, yeah?" He licks his lips, and Pete inhales sharply because you'd have to be dead not to notice Patrick's mouth. And when it's all wet and shiny like that... Patrick says, "Pete?"
He looks worried. Is that... Do you want to wait?
No, Pete assures him, catching up. Sorry, I was just... distracted.
Okay, Patrick says, shuffling back and forth. So, I guess we can just...
He gestures toward his bedroom.
Yeah, Pete says, and then because someone has to do something or they're just going to hover here in the foyer all afternoon, he forces himself to walk down the hall.
Patrick's bed doesn't look any neater than Pete's, but at least it's Patrick's mess, not Pete's. Pete turns away from the nest of sheets and blankets piled in the middle of the mattress and finds Patrick right behind him. Patrick says,
"If we're going to do this..."
And he takes Pete's face in his hands and kisses him.
This kiss couldn't be less like the one in the bakery. Patrick doesn't hesitate this time. He's intent and focused, kissing Pete hard and then pulling back to nip at his lower lip. One of Patrick's hands cups the back of Pete's head, fingers weaving through Pete's cropped hair, and Pete feels like his knees are going to give out. He groans and sits back hard on the bed. Patrick just crowds in closer, kissing him thoroughly and pressing the length of his body against Pete's. Pete's already achingly hard, but that's okay because he can tell Patrick's already there too.
"Want to suck you," Patrick mutters in Pete's ear. The feel of his hot breath makes Pete shudder. It's not really in keeping with the spirit of his offer, but he'd have to be crazy to say no to that.
"Yeah, okay, if you insist."
Patrick bites Pete's earlobe hard and then soothes the bite with his tongue. Then, like he's afraid he might lose his nerve, he drops to his knees and rubs his face on the inside of Pete's jeans. He fumbles at the button to Pete's jeans, but it refuses to come undone.
"Here," Pete says, pushing Patrick's hand away.
"Let me."
The button continues to stick, but when Pete shifts his hips up, it comes loose, and he pulls the zip down too. Patrick yanks Pete's jeans and briefs down to his knees and presses his face into the tattoo on Pete's belly, nosing at it and inhaling sharply. Patrick's tongue on Pete's belly is almost too much, a tickling flutter that sends little shivers of need down his spine. He squirms up against Patrick's mouth, whines a little, and Patrick says,
"Shh, let me take care of you."
Which was not the plan at all. That was supposed to be Pete's job. But Patrick's fingers are digging into Pete's hips, and he's dipping his head to nuzzle the crease of Pete's thigh, and then he bites down hard on the sensitive skin of Pete's inner thigh, and fuck it, if this is what makes Patrick happy, who is Pete to argue?
Patrick teases Pete, licking and biting at his legs and then rubbing his face against Pete's cock until he's begging for it shamelessly, repeating, "Patrick," and "please," gripping the sheets because it feels like too much, too greedy, to do what he really wants and put his hand in Patrick's hair and pull him in. All the boundaries are shifting and Pete's not sure how much he's allowed to take, how much he should let himself reveal, and underneath the restless urgency of the moment, there's a fear that he'll go too far, do the wrong thing, and screw everything up. Then Patrick's mouth is on him and every other concern recedes so far from Pete's mind that it might as well have ceased to exist. Everything narrows down to the hot suction of Patrick's mouth, the drag of Pete's dick over Patrick's lips, the filthy wet sounds, and the satisfied little noises Patrick is making.
"Fuck Patrick," Pete says helplessly, then covers his mouth with his hand and bites down on his palm, terrified of what he might say in this unguarded moment. Patrick seems to take this as a challenge, pulling back and flicking his tongue under the head of Pete's cock, then wrapping a hand around the base and stroking while he sucks hard on the tip. And suddenly Pete's coming, before he has a chance to warn Patrick, squeezing his eyes shut and groaning against his palm, bucking up against Patrick's mouth helplessly. Patrick pulls off with a loud slurp and wipes his hand on his jeans. He sits back on his heels, smirking at Pete, his mouth red and used looking. And Pete needs to be touching him, kissing him, now, now, now. He can't really tell anymore if this is the best idea he's ever had or the worst, but it doesn't really matter, can't matter, when Patrick's looking at him like that. Pete's disoriented when he wakes up in Patrick's bed. He can't remember the last time he took a nap. The smell of sex is heavy in the air, and the last rays of sunlight are casting long shadows across the room. Patrick's still asleep, curled into Pete's side, not snoring exactly, but wheezing slightly on every exhale. Pete idly strokes the fine hairs on the back of Patrick's neck and stares at the ceiling. For once, all the noise in his head is quiet, and he just wants to savor the moment. Eventually, the side of his body that's not pressed up next to Patrick gets cold, and Pete maneuvers out of the bed. He can hardly see anything in the dimly lit room, and he has to scrabble around on the floor, finding and rejecting two pairs of Patrick's jeans before finally locating his own jeans under the bed. His phone tells him that it's 5:47, and he's got 3 new emails and a text from Ian.
Shut down for the night. Hope everything's okay.
Pete thinks, me too, but squelches the thought. Everything is fine. This just makes sense. Patrick seems to agree, because the next night at dinner he says, So, are we? He gestures helplessly and finally blurts out, I bought condoms.
Well, yeah, Pete says, very reasonably. We're still going to be married for weeks. Months, really. One time wouldn't really solve your problem, would it?
Patrick's smile is brilliant. After dinner, he presses Pete up against the fridge and kisses him ruthlessly, grinding himself against Pete's thigh. Pete's about to point out that they should probably do the dishes, but Patrick's voice is filthy in Pete's ear. Can I fuck you? Or do you want to?
Yes, yeah, either way,
Pete says. Memory and fantasy are all tangled up in his head. There are too many options, and he has no idea how he's supposed to decide what happens next.
I'm not...
His voice breaks off in a gasp when Patrick's hand slips down the back of his jeans, one finger teasing at his tailbone.
Pete,
Patrick whispers into the damp skin of Pete's collarbone.
Can we just... I need room to work.
Fuck it, the dishes can wait. After that, it's easy to just fall into a routine. Pete starts napping with Patrick after they close down the shop. It's not even always sex. Sometimes Pete just falls asleep with Patrick's hand tracing over his tattoos. And after dinner, they usually wind up in Patrick's bed, talking over the day, debating the pros and cons of extending the hours or expanding into the space next door. One night, they're pressed together, sweaty and sticky and still catching their breath, arguing about who's going to tell Ian that he has to stop leaving his shirt unbuttoned to his navel, when Patrick yawns and says,
Fuck it, I'll do it in the morning. Go to sleep, babe.
Pete flinches, but Patrick doesn't seem to realize what he's said. After a beat, Pete says, Good night, and clicks off the bedside lamp. The next time it happens, Pete's on his knees in the office and he's sucking Patrick off, fast and dirty, trying not to think about the possibility of Spencer coming in early and finding them like this. Patrick's making these gorgeous, helpless noises and then says,
Yeah, baby, yeah, like that,
and tips his hips up and comes down Pete's throat. Pete tells himself that it doesn't mean anything, that Patrick was just on autopilot. That doesn't stop Pete from jerking off to the memory the next morning in the shower. Pete's in the office updating QuickBooks when Patrick comes in, brushing flour off his jeans. He sits on the edge of the desk and his foot knocks against Pete's knee. Still cash flow positive? His t-shirt is pulling a bit over his tummy, and there's a softness to his jawline that Pete hasn't seen in a while. He looks content.
No bankruptcy court this month, Pete agrees.
February is usually slow, but it's actually been one of the best months they've ever had. Patrick makes a face and says, Speaking of court, we have that meeting tomorrow with Nate, right? Pete just stares, bewildered. He genuinely has no idea what Patrick's talking about.
About the hearing? Patrick prompts.
Sure, Pete says. Right. The divorce has kind of fallen off his radar over the past month. He's antsy the rest of the day, and when Gabe and Bill invite them to go see a movie, Pete declines. Patrick looks torn, but Pete urges him to go. He putters around the empty apartment for a while, makes himself some ramen noodles for dinner, and crashes early, sleeping in his own bed for the first time in weeks. The next afternoon, Nate says,
So we need to discuss the distribution of property. I'm assuming you'll each retain 50% ownership of the business, but what about personal goods?
Patrick says, What do you mean?
The stuff in your apartment? When one of you moves out, how are you guys going to divide it?
At Patrick's blank look, Nate says,
Joint purchases. The sofa, the television, that kind of thing.
Nobody's moving out, Pete explains. We don't need to split up the property.
Why would one of us move? Patrick says. It's cheaper for us to share the apartment, and it's convenient for us to both be close to the shop. Nate scrutinizes Patrick's face for a minute, and then he starts shaking his head.
Unbelievable. You guys did it again, didn't you?
Patrick stares at the chocolate cream pie he brought Nate. Pete's got a serious case of deja vu. He puts on his best innocent face.
What?
Nate snorts.
Uh-huh. Look, one time for old time's sake or whatever, but seriously, you...
Patrick giggles and then covers his mouth guiltily. Nate gives Patrick another sharp look.
Oh my God, it wasn't just once, was it?
Pete gives up dissembling as a lost cause.
No?
Patrick still got his hand over his mouth. His eyes are wide and a little panicked. Nate sighs.
Let's recap. The only thing that's changed since you decided to get a divorce is that you started sleeping together on the regular. And, as near as I can tell, nothing whatsoever is going to change once you separate. So, this is grounds for divorce, how?
Pete shrugs. Nate's not wrong, but Pete has no idea what he's supposed to say to that.
Even a no-fault divorce isn't cheap. If you're going to continue on exactly as you are now, why bother?
Nate arches his eyebrows at them exactly the way Pete's soccer coach had when he caught Pete making out with Jake Schwartz in the locker room.
I want you guys to go home and think about whether this is really what you want to do.
Neither of them speaks on the drive back to the bakery. When they pull into the parking lot, Patrick says,
Look, I'm not...
Pete cuts him off. No, yeah, I get it. You made it clear you weren't into me years ago. You don't have to give me the brush-off speech. Patrick turns and gives Pete an irritated look.
God, you can be so... obtuse sometimes!
He stares at the side of the building for a while and then says,
I have... an order I need to work on.
He throws open the car door and disappears around the corner of the building toward the back entrance of the bakery. Pete can't recall any big orders. Probably Patrick is just looking for an excuse to avoid him. When Pete gets into the apartment, he gets a beer from the fridge and drinks it on the couch while he stares at the blank television screen, trying on various worst-case scenarios for size. In retrospect, the whole, we're married, we might as well sleep together idea seems ill-advised. Clearly Patrick is regretting it, and now things are going to be awkward. When Pete's catastrophizing descends to imagining Patrick on Amazing Cakes, explaining how he's turned his life around since he abandoned his deadweight partner and set out on his own, Pete forces himself to turn on the television. He clicks through the channels until he finds Say Yes to the Dress and hate watches it brutally. Pete falls asleep on the couch before the end of the episode. He startles awake when the overhead light clicks on and tries to shake off a dream in which Patrick was wearing a bunny suit and marrying Gabe. The television is playing an infomercial, and Patrick is standing in the doorway holding a giant cake box.
What?
Pete's voice cracks. He sits up and clears his throat, then runs his fingers through his hair.
What time is it?
10?
Jeez, what are you still doing up?
Patrick shifts from one foot to the other. He's gripping the box so hard the cardboard is buckling.
I told you, I had to make a cake.
Pete blinks. Presumably, the box is the order Patrick was working on. Pete can't figure out why the hell Patrick's brought it upstairs.
I'm just going to...
Patrick gestures toward the kitchen with his head. But instead of moving, he shuffles from foot to foot some more. Pete blinks and tries to gather his thoughts. There's a faint scent of almonds in the air, which doesn't make it any easier to concentrate.
What the hell is up?
I should go to bed, Patrick says, all in a rush. His grip on the cake is so tight, Pete's beginning to worry about the structural integrity of the box. Patrick bites his bottom lip and then turns abruptly and heads into the kitchen. Pete's still waking up, so it takes him a minute to pull himself to his feet and make it to the kitchen. Patrick's already leaving, and Pete nearly runs into him. The box is on the counter.
It was probably a dumb idea,
Patrick mumbles. He tries to slip around Pete, but Pete grabs his arm and holds him there.
What's the deal with the cake?
Patrick looks down at the black and white tile floor.
I made it for you.
Pete's afraid to let go of Patrick's arm, so he sort of tugs him along toward the counter. Luckily, the kitchen's not very big. With his free hand, Pete opens the box. Inside is what is clearly a wedding cake. Towering layers enrobed in black and red fondant, decorated with buttercream roses and marzipan hearts. There are two marzipan figures perched on the top layer, sitting on the edge like they might jump right off the cake. The one with red gold hair is neatly dressed, bow tie knotted, and jacket buttoned. The other is missing his jacket, and his bow tie is loose around his neck. His sleeves are rolled up to reveal ink on both arms. The level of detail is mind-blowing. When Pete squints, he can see that each tattoo has been rendered faithfully in miniature.
You... what... I...
Pete stutters out, completely at a loss for words. Patrick cuts his eyes to the cake and then blurts out,
It's not that I didn't want to be with you, okay? But I couldn't... I could be your friend and run a business with you, or I could be your husband and run a business with you, but I can't be your ex and run a business with you.
What the fuck? You don't exactly have a great track record for long-term relationships. Pete starts to protest, but Patrick cuts him off.
Things go wrong, he says pointedly, and when things go wrong, they tend to implode.
Pete tries again to get a word in edgewise, and Patrick says,
Name one ex that you're still on speaking terms with.
Gabe, Pete retorts.
He's not an ex. You slept with him once a million years ago. I'm talking about relationships. Mikey, Ryan, Ashley, don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about.
Patrick's not wrong. The part he doesn't know is that in each of those cases, the thing that went wrong was that the other person gave up on Pete prioritizing them over Patrick. Before, Patrick looks at his hands.
I'd seen how it went, and I couldn't imagine trying to be business partners with you after something like that. I didn't want to put everything we have at risk by dating you and having it all go down in flames. And then it seemed like you were okay with just letting it be a one-time thing, so I tried to just put it behind us.
Oh, Pete says weakly, still not entirely sure what's happening.
But I'm starting to think... I mean, maybe I'm misreading the signals, but you seem like...
Patrick stops, tilts his chin up, and goes on.
If you're in it for the long haul, if we're married, that's different.
Pete boggles. Are you asking me to marry you?
We're already married, Patrick says, with that same defiant note in his voice.
He's not wrong, but something in Pete balks at just letting it happen. Well, yeah, he says uncertainly, but he cuts himself off when he sees the look on Patrick's face. I'm in love with you. Pete says, because he can't let Patrick think he's alone in this. I want to be married to you, Pete insists, squeezing Patrick's arm. But I want it to be deliberate, like a conscious decision, not just something that happened to us. Pete wishes like hell he had a ring or something to give Patrick right now. The cake is a pretty grandiose gesture, and Pete wants to return the favor to pledge his troth in some completely unmistakable way. The pull tab from the beer Pete drank that afternoon is still sitting on the counter beside the box. It's not a Tiffany engagement ring, but needs must, right? Pete grabs it and separates the tab from the ring, and then, because Pete refuses to do things halfway, he sinks down to one knee and takes Patrick's hand. Patrick squeaks. His eyes are wide, and he's gripping the counter with his other hand. Pete says, "Will you marry me, Patrick? Not by accident, not because of some mistake with the paperwork. On purpose, till death do us part?"
Yeah,
Patrick whispers.
Yes.
Pete slips the ring from the pull tab onto Patrick's finger and promises, I'll get you a real ring. Patrick tugs Pete up and crowds him up against the counter. He says, And a real wedding? Right up against his lips. Pete gets distracted by Patrick's kiss, but eventually he pulls away and says, Anything you want. He's never meant anything more. The end.